Hey now, hey now, hey now. Welcome in, y'all. And guess what time it is? That's right, it's porch time, and I am your one, your only Ms. McKinney. And I know you guys have to be extremely glad about that. Let's get into it. All right, now, it has been a while since we've come to you with a audio podcast episode. Why? Because we've been hot stroking and big boxing on YouTube. There are about 3 episodes out there now. Big shout outs to all the ladies and all the individuals who have joined us on the panel. We've had some exciting ones. We've had Miss Christy Lee, the famous Miss Christy Lee. We've had Man Space Podcast. We've had T. Nicole of Purpose Driven Life. We've had Miss Keisha from the Wifey Lounge. We've had an exciting panel, you guys. And I thank you to each and everyone who have listened to us as or watched us rather. Woohoo. As we've been doing video virtual podcasts as well. Now, we are still learning how to upload those to the Spotify, Anchor, and Apple DSLs or different platforms, but we're going to get them out there. Meanwhile, again, thank you guys for watching us Facebook Live, and thank you for watching us on YouTube. I appreciate you guys making this little country girl's dreams and midlife crisis, if you will, come true. Thank you all so very much again. So today we are dropping another I Am episode. You're going to get to meet Legacy 31. Legacy 31 carries on the legacy of speaking out about abuse. Not only the type of abuse that you might experience within your family, but certainly the type of abuse that you might actually experience within your church family or things that you need to speak out about or want to speak out about and never have. Legacy 31 is here to give us the courage and the inspiration to do so, so that the healing can begin. So you guys stay tuned and listen to Miss Legacy 31. Hey now, listeners, thank you very much for coming back today. We have an interest in listening for you as usual. I'm going to call her Miss Legacy 21 because she's not formally introduced herself to me yet, but she's going to introduce herself to us now. Miss Legacy 31, the floor is yours, and thank you for joining us. Tell us who you are and a little bit about what you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. So as you said, I have an organization called Legacy 31. My name is Tia Payne, and I began Legacy 31 as a way of giving back to the faith-based community, those individuals who have been victimized by intimate partner violence or sexual assault. And that kind of covers a wide range of, being victimized. I grew up in a household where my father was a pastor, but he was very abusive to our household, me and my brothers and sisters. A lot of physical abuse, a lot of mental abuse, a lot of verbal and emotional. And so when I grew up, I became a child advocate because, you know, we dealt with a lot of child abuse in our home. One part of that was telling those stories, telling that tale is not always receptive. And it's really not receptive when you're talking about, oh, but it was the pastor of the church. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times I felt like my voice was stifled, which pushed me to become a youth advocate when I got old enough to really try to give back. As a part of that, it connected me to my local battered women's shelter. And so from that point, you know, I seen myself, I seen my mom, because by that time I had grown up to repeat the cycle in my first marriage, which was abusive. So being connected just as a youth advocate opened my world to new terminology, domestic violence, sexual assault, all of these things that I didn't know about, and all of these things that was frowned upon talking about in our home and even in my first marriage. You know, the what happens at home stays at home. Yes. Stuff. And so when I began to work in the shelter, a lot of the ladies in the shelter would come ask me about faith-based services. Do you guys offer faith-based services? Do you have a church that's coming in to talk with us, groups? And we didn't have any of that. And so when I chose to branch off on my own, I really began to pray, like, okay, where's my niche at? Like, how am I going to do this? And then colliding my advocacy world and my strong faith, my relationship with God was just perfect. It just seemed like that's what I should do. And so that's how I began Legacy 31, which we do a lot of focus on domestic violence. But when you talk about domestic violence, terminology changed to intimate partner violence because it encompasses both domestic violence and sexual assault that can happen between two intimate partners. And then so I did that and then start streamlining my services to, outreach to the faith community where that conversation is just simply not had or our counsel is not the best. We want to have, couples come in and, talk about what happened at home or how to, and that's just not good counsel. In my situation, I was told I needed to stay and pray and be a little more submissive. And again, it's not good counsel. I feel like your counsel should be safety. And that was not my counsel. So, with all the years of experience that I had, all the education that I had, working the field, I brought that together, with my faith, with how I didn't want another Tia Payne to be a culprit. And so that's how Legacy 31, formed back in 2019. And I've just been going strong ever since then, really trying to meet the demand of having that conversation with churches. I go around and I share my story, wherever is needed. I love having that conversation, because it brings awareness, and I fully believe that as we're sharing these stories and talking about this, it just shines a light on the subject that, people have for years been told to hush about, and we don't talk about that. Oh, that's private. Let's not talk about those things. So, in a nutshell, that's kind of what Legacy 31 does. I have a She Survived movement, and that in itself really focuses on the survival that women have been through. It don't just encompass, the physical abuse or the sexual abuse, but it really focuses on your survival past, all of the traumas that has hit your life. And then I always tell people, I'm like, we can physically be out of a traumatic situation, but until our mental catches up, we have not truly survived. And so that's kind of what She Survived talks about. We shine a light on, the stories that the she has survived. And then we have our annual luncheon, we have monthly meetups. We do a little bit of everything where we're having that focus on our stories. And that began last, I would like to say last March. That began last March.
Excellent. And so, what is your community? I know you said you do some travel, so if you're virtual or you're worldwide, but what is your home community?
My home community is in Akron, Ohio. So I was born and raised in Akron, Ohio. A lot of my victimization happened in Akron, Ohio. So I definitely, try to focus on my community just because, I've met people here in Akron and we sh share a similar story. Like, oh wow, I never would have thought that you went through something like that. And it just goes to show that those stories are hidden and they're purposefully hidden. Because people don't want to deal with trauma within the family. And so that's why I'm so thankful that I'm able, that I've been chosen, to even be able to have those conversations with people.
And a blessed individual you are because they're hard topics, you're right. And I think in any community, but definitely in ours, you're right. The mentality of what goes on in the house stays in the house has always been there. I did try to break that cycle with my son, but then, it was just a really difficult thing because on the outside world, there are some things that you want your child to have full knowledge of before speaking out about, right? But then I guess in those situations, you just have to pray and, let God take his course. I didn't have to go through that, thank goodness. But I can see how, with everything that we see on social media and things like that, that kids can get misconstrued on you know, what's abuse and what's not abuse, and then how we're taught that what I'm doing is helping you. On the other end, like when I was coming up, it's what I'm doing is helping you. I'm not hurting you, even if it hurts. And so I completely get that. I commend you for being able to move forward. It seems like you got started right during COVID. I saw a meme that said, if COVID didn't bring out the hustler in you, you just ain't got it. And apparently you do. So how's COVID been for you? Was it a blessing or a curse?
So honestly, I started in January, February of 2019. COVID really got going and announced in what, March or April or something like that, that year. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get a big name, or maybe COVID hit that the end of that year. So I was kind of already working and putting things out there. So in 2020, I guess it was that COVID was officially announced. I had already kind of been working. I'm a private nonprofit. So a lot of the people that I worked with, you know, we would meet at a Panera Bread or different things like that. Or, you know, I had Zoom meetings with people. And so I was just able to really continue to incorporate that in what I did when COVID hit. I set up a crisis line that people are able to text, and I'll do a lot of crisis intervention over texting with people who's more comfortable with that versus meeting in public. So any way I could still offer, you know, services, get the word out. A lot of people felt like, you know, those services weren't available because of COVID. Everybody shut down. We figured out a different way to provide those services and still meet the demand, because statistics show that domestic violence actually, I'm going to say it climbed during COVID, but that's not a true description. It's more along the lines of people began to report more because they were forced to be in close contact, close quarters with their abuser. And so we've seen an increase in hotline calls. Even me with my crisis line that I have had an increase in calls and text messages. Of course, you know, inboxes on, you know, social media is big. So between TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, I do a lot of crisis intervention through our the inbox. And so that increased during you know, the shutdown, if you will. Just people needing somebody to talk to, doing some safety planning with people, you know, letting them know that the big agencies that could shelter was still open, still accepting people. So kind of being that liaison, you know, to find safety.
And that is awesome. And like I just said, if COVID didn't bring out the hustler in you, you just didn't have it. And of course you did. Of course you did. What would you say your counseling style is like? Do you, I don't know if I'm saying it the right way, but maybe help the victim become more accountable for what has happened to them? Or is it more of a, you know, that was wrong, this is right, let me help you see the light. What's your counseling style like?
So to be perfectly honest with you, you can have somebody who is in an abusive relationship who they don't want to leave that relationship. They want to figure out how best to make the relationship work. Yes, I want the abuse to stop. Yes, I don't want to be abused. But you got your feelings and emotions tied up into this one person. Most relationships don't start out abusive. We all put our best foot forward when we're going into these relationships, and it's no different when we're talking about an unhealthy relationship. Most of these relationships become unhealthy over time, even if we hid our true colors in the beginning. So it's not like I meet this guy, we start dating, and immediately he begins to abuse me. It doesn't typically happen that way. And so during our sessions, when I'm sitting and talking with someone, I have to validate their feelings because I've been there myself. I have to validate that, okay, it wasn't always bad. He didn't always treat me this way. Maybe we got children together and I want my children to have a father. Or maybe, you know, I still love this person. I just don't like this part of this person. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's all different type of ways. And typically I kind of let it be, you know, client driven. where are you at in the process? While I try to validate, but while I also talk to them about safety. Safety is the number one thing when we're dealing with domestic violence relationships. You don't want to encourage somebody to stay in that situation, but you also are in a position of, I can't tell you to leave your situation. I need you to make that decision, because if you make the decision, it's a real decision at that point. Not, oh, I was talking to Tia Payne and she said, pack up right now and leave. Well, you know, 9 times out of 10, with the way statistics work, it takes a good 7 times before you officially leave anyway. It's a very real statement when you're tired. And at that point, that's when you leave. I'm finally tired and I just need some help to navigate how I'm going to get out of the situation safely. Leaving a domestic violence situation, usually the first couple of days is the most crucial time. The unsafest time is the day you leave, because that's when, emotions get out of control, especially if that abuser figures out you're leaving. We've seen, when it comes to suicide, murder suicides, it's always in that time frame. We'll hear a lot on the news about, and for the sake of this conversation, men tend to be abusers more often than women. But a lot of times we'll see where the ex-husband has, come back and, killed the ex-wife because they left or did all manner of things. And it's that leaving me piece is a big deal. So you got to just, figure out how to safely get out. One thing you will hear people in that situation say is it's safer for me to stay, because maybe they've attempted to leave and, damage was done to the people I love, or threats was made, or they've proven that they can hurt me. So me staying keeps them at bay when it comes to the more traumatic side of this situation. So sometimes I'll stay just because it's safer. So there's a whole bunch of different reasons why people choose to stay. But society will say, well, if you're still there, it can't be that bad. That's not necessarily true. It's actually very unsafe leaving. That's the time where, you'll hear about those horror situations is during the time of me trying to get out. And so I try to educate people quite often that staying sometimes is safer. And I hate to put it that way, because you would think someone being abused, but depending on who you're dealing with as an abuser, the victim knows that person best. They're the expert on their situation. I'm not, as the advocate, I'm not the best. You're the expert. I can help you. I can give you some good sound wisdom. I can point you in the right direction, but I don't know your abuser. You know your abuser. So you're going to understand, all the ins and outs of who this person is. And with that knowledge, let's have a meeting of the minds to best figure out how we're going to get you out of that situation safely.
Yes, that all makes total sense to me. I'm glad that you brought up the point that sometimes people say because of an emotional attachment, because I myself always thought maybe it was financial. Maybe you thought you wouldn't be able to make it without,
That's a big one. That's
his help and that one. Kind of thing. I've never really thought about the other part of that. That's awesome. And I think it's great that you provide them with a way to be able to escape or to leave if that's what they want to do. I know that laws vary from state to state, but based on your professional opinion, are the laws set up to be able to help? And, I'm sorry, listeners, I say the woman to be able to leave, because that's what a majority of the situations are that I know of. So that's my question. Would you say that the laws are set up in to benefit, or are there some laws out there that one who's in a situation like this would probably need to know to give them the confidence to leave?
Ooh, well, that's a loaded question there. So what I will say is, because there has been there are women abusers. So when I was growing up, there was not a light shined on domestic violence. That didn't happen till years later after I was an adult. And so what happened was the police got retrained in a lot of areas. And so now their thing, because men can be abused too, and that has been shown, now it is whoever we identify as the primary aggressor. So literally, the man can be the abuser. I scratched you and drew blood trying to get you off of me. And by the time the police got there, they identify my abuser as the victim because he has a scratch on his face because I was trying to protect myself. And now I'm the one, as the victim, being charged with domestic violence for trying to protect myself. So to answer your question, no, I do not think the laws are set up to, and in this instance, protect women who are in that situation. I understand why the law is like the law, but as the weaker vessel, so to speak, trying to protect myself, I can always still be charged with domestic violence, depending on how the police identify who the primary aggressor is. And so I don't think that's fair because we deal with a lot of those cases here in Ohio where, I'm just trying to protect myself. So I'm identified as the aggressor. And now I have to go through all of this stuff because I'm the one charged and sometimes convicted of domestic violence, and he gets off scot-free, and I was simply trying to protect myself. So, it's kind of weird. A lot of times these situations will boil down to he say, she say, especially if there's no bruising, no marks, no anything. It just depends, really. It really depends. So you just got to be careful. I always encourage people to document, text message, send it to your emails, phone calls, record, do anything that you can, because a lot of times these cases, especially when we're talking protection orders and such, it's going to boil down to a paper trail. Who has the most documentation with threats and all of this stuff? And if we have that paper trail, it's a lot easier to protect ourselves. And even in my situation, I've had a protection order against my ex-husband for years, and sometimes it's simply just a piece of paper. And in my case, sometimes it's just a piece of paper, and sometimes they don't pay attention to you're banned from walking on my street, you're banned from calling my phone, you're banned from, having somebody contact me on your behalf. All of those are pieces that's in a protection order, and sometimes it doesn't matter, like, depending on the emotional stability of whoever that abuser is, they may not care. That's just a piece of paper. And they'll still harass you. They'll still, do all manner of things. So I think if we shined a more in-depth light on, the what domestic violence looks like, it's not the same in every situation. Every situation is different. And I think if law enforcement, if the judicial system, if they could really see a good picture of that, maybe they would change how some of the laws is. But even with the strides we've made over the years of bringing a light to these type of subjects, it's still a very taboo subject, and people are still very judgmental because they're on the outside looking in. So, to sum that all up.
Yes, I understand all of that. One misconception that I would like to address, really the only one that I would like to address, is that the victims, so I you've changed me. I'm no longer just saying women, I'm saying victims now, y'all. She got me. She got me. That the victims are typically the same type of characteristic, everyone that's abused fits this type of characteristic. Would you say that that's true or no?
No, that is one of the greatest myths of all time. So the domestic violence don't pick based on color, religion, financial status. If you get involved with an abuser, you get involved with an abuser. It was a case in Cleveland, Ohio, where, it was a judge. He had said he was a judge, and he ended up killing his ex-wife. That's been one of the last few years, that's been one of the highlight cases. She had protection orders. She did all this stuff, but because of his status in the community, no one would expect that. And so a lot of things went unaddressed. One conversation I have with people is, I understand your situation with this person was good, was great, but that does not take away from my experience with this person. So a lot of times people do a lot of victim blaming. He would never do that. He's such a great guy. Yeah. He's a great guy for you, but he was not a great guy with me, you know? And so, you know, having that conversation with people helps, you know, bring to light. And then it's almost disrespectful to tell somebody that, like, he would never do something like that. Why would you say that? Why would not? My story is my story. It's totally different than your experience. So, even having that conversation can be difficult because people are staunch in their belief of who they're supporting. You know, that's why when it comes to a lot of those narcissistic abusers, oh, those cases, that can be a whole different podcast. So,
right. I completely understand. And it falls in line with kind of what you went through with your dad, right? I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. He was the pillar of the community, if you will. So, a lot of people didn't want to address the fact that, oh, the pastor of the church, he's abusive. No, he's not. He's a great guy. It's that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde syndrome that you'll see. Your abuser can be great. Everybody sees him as an awesome, amazing guy because that's what he presents to his public. But behind closed doors, it's a totally different person.
Yes. And so what would you say to an individual that's going speaking to the child that's going through a situation like that? Did you get a chance to talk this over with your father? I know you said, I think a conversation we had earlier, you said it didn't necessarily go well or it wasn't well received. Did you get a chance to speak up?
So I spoke up by writing my book. Back in 2017, I wrote a book called Reflections of a PK. And that really shows and talks about my story. My father passed away in 2007. Okay. And 2 weeks before he passed, the most he said was, you know, if I've ever did anything to offend you, I need you to forgive me. So it wasn't a true apology. And although it took years to heal, I at least had the understanding that I still had to survive. I still had to be productive, even if I never got that apology. And so it was one of those type of situations. And so through that journey of me healing, the best way I could bring to light some of all these things is to write my book that told my story. And yes, it was not well received by past church members. But when I finally got to the space to be able to write that story, I literally didn't care who believed my story or not. You know, it was like, for me, that's a moot point. I don't really care whether or not you believe it. Because some people knew who my father was, but they just chose not to address it. So when I wrote my story, it wasn't coming against the church. It wasn't even coming against my father. It was literally therapeutic, me telling my story and shining a light on some of those differences. He's in higher of authority in church. People don't want to address it. That intersection between, you know, your faith and being a victim is a really big thing, especially when we're talking about Black survivors.
Yes.
That's a big thing. And so a lot of times people can't reconcile the fact that I see this pastor as God, for lack of a better word, and God wouldn't use someone who acts horrible like that at home. But in a word, it says he will use whom he pleases. So that intersection is hard for people a lot of times when we're talking about, you know, we go to church and we serve God. God's a good God. There's a such thing as trauma. What does that mean? You know, so I told my story. My book has been consistently selling since 2017, especially during October when it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. When I go do speaking engagements or I go do trainings for agencies, any of those things that I participate in, my book comes back around and people start buying it again because they want the most intimate part of my story versus just the glimpse that I give them during a speaking engagement somewhere. So no, there was never really no resolve through my personal relationship with him. but through the power of God, there has been resolve
Yes.
in that situation.
Yes. Oh my gosh, love you to death. So my last question before we give you a chance to tell us where we can find you, how we can book you, and then I definitely need to find out where I'm going to get that book. What would you say to again, the child who is trying to figure it out, and to the victim? I told y'all she changed me. To the domestic violence victim that's trying to figure it out. Like, what would your best advice be to them at this point in time?
The best advice I can give is find that trust for a child. It would be find that trusted person that most kids are not going to make up a story of abuse. It's not in their makeup to tell a trauma lie, unless there's some truth to it. Like you can push and prime and get a child to say some things, but if we had 10 cases of abuse, 9 of those cases will be true, and maybe one will be, we're having a messy divorce and I don't want him to win, so I'm gonna tell my kid to say this happened. So kids don't typically say that. So I can't address this to a child, but what I can address is the parent or the adult in that child's life. Believe them. Believe them. And a lot of times it comes down to, when we're talking, even sexual assault with cases and concerning kids, believe them. That's simply all you have to do is believe them and find out what's going on. You'll notice their play changes. You'll notice how they interact with that said adult changes, or just being at home in general. I'm more aggressive. Oh, they're telling me I need ADHD medication. Well, no, you just need to address the trauma going on in my home. So believing the kids when they say that is probably the best advice I can give to the adult. And then what if it's a case where that kid simply is not believed? They got to keep talking. They got to keep telling that story because someone is going to understand the trauma this child speaks to and will be able to get them help. But typically that starts with the adults in that child's life. Now, if it's an adult, I would actually tell them the same thing. Keep telling your story. Find that trusted friend. I tell the family members who are trying to help if they know something is going on, don't give up. People who are victims burn a lot of bridges, a lot of bridges. Like myself, I abused alcohol. That was a way for me to cope. A lot of times, victims cope with drugs and alcohol or, just different things. For the family, don't give up on that person. Definitely create your boundaries. You don't have to let that person live with you. You don't have to let that person take advantage of you, especially if alcohol and drugs is a factor as well. Create your boundaries, but always let that person know I'm here for you. And when you're ready, you're going to have my help, even if it's I always give you a phone number. When someone is tired and they're finally ready, they're going to the person that supported them, even if that person maintained their boundaries, if that makes sense. You're always going to go back to the person that was willing to listen to you, that always said, "Hey, how can I help you?" You're always going back to that person. So, just keep trying. Keep telling those stories. I went to this conference last week, and we had one of the speakers was a lobbyist, and so he gave us three choices when it comes to lawmakers, changing laws or, whatever the case may be. One of the choices he gave us was storytelling. And so everybody was, talking all the other choices, and I raised my hand for storytelling. And so once he got done, he said, "So, I have to tell you, the person who picked, the people who picked storytelling, you're right." He said, "When it comes down to a law going into effect or any changes being made, it's because of people like you or because of the shared stories of what this may or may not affect when it comes to people." He said, "So keep telling those stories." He said, "When you're going to your congressman or you're doing all of those type of things, come with real lived experiences because that's what matters when we're making laws. We want to identify with why this is a bad idea or why this is going to be an amazing idea for the people that we serve." And so I've always said that. I have a tagline that I say all the time: Legacy 31 aims to change the narrative one survivor story at a time, because telling those truths, that they matter, and it shines a light on something that's been hidden in the dark for so long.
Greatness. Tell us where we can find you and where we can get your book.
So I am on all platforms. I'm on Facebook under Legacy 31. I'm on Instagram under Legacy 31. And then my website is legacy31.org. You can order my book on my website. You can also find it on Amazon as well. So all of those platforms, I'm on TikTok under Tia, I want to say dot pain. And that is where I actually get on there. For a long time, I shared my story on there, talking about different things. I also use it as a platform to share different things that has changed, different stories that has greatly impacted me. So I do a lot of that through TikTok. TikTok has opened up a wider platform for me, with people reaching out for services. People all over the world are reaching out. I literally, when I talk about She Survived, had somebody reach out from Australia. You know, they
Wow.
bought a shirt and did all of those type of things. So, excuse me, but the best way to kind of follow a lot of stuff is, you know, through my website or social media.
Well, you have gained a follower in me. I thank you so much for joining us today. I know next month is going to be busy for you, so we're glad you had the time. I hope it won't be the last time, because we're definitely going to be shouting you out and kicking you off on the porch for sure.
Awesome.
Thank you again for joining us, and you take care and be blessed.
Thank you as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And just like that, we keep the interest in listening coming. Thank you so much for joining us, for talking to us about a subject that is not always easy to talk about. But again, you gave us the courage and the inspiration that we may need in our lives to move forward, to heal from those situations, and certainly help another one along the way. So thank you again, Miss Legacy 21, 31, excuse me, Legacy 31, for joining us. So what time is it? It's time for you to be you, baby. Which is absolutely beautiful. Don't let nary another individual tell you anything any different. And if they do, get them right on up out of your circle. It's imperative today. Do it today. Be strong, be you, and be blessed. Take care.